Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the studios of KSFR and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. I'd like to introduce Tia Lesson and Carl Deal. They are the producers and directors of the film Trouble the Water, which was the winner of the Grand Jury Prize at the 2008 Sundance Film Festival, and it opens today at the Screen on the campus of the College of Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much for having us.
Very happy to be here.
Now, this is an extraordinary film about a couple whom we meet, Kim and Scott. Kim got a video camera. She lives in New Orleans. It's right before Hurricane Katrina. And she starts taking pictures, taking video footage. No idea that this gigantic disaster is looming.
She didn't have a strong sense of it. I mean, you're absolutely right. It was 2 weeks before the storm. For $20 on the street, she bought this dinosaur of a camera. I mean, high video in our business is, you know, it's 12-year-old technology. And what she captured is the most remarkable document of the greatest human disaster in my lifetime. Absolutely astounding. This is not the Katrina that you saw on television.
Well, she started taping the day before the storm hit. And so you see the wind whipping through the trees and the rain starts falling. By the time Katrina makes landfall, you know, in the levees break, the water's up to the porch, and she continues taping. Really, she goes up into the attic with her husband, and the camera continues to roll. It's really chilling. And then we go on a journey with them, first through the ordeal of Katrina, and then in the aftermath.
So they keep the camera on the whole time. Did you get the sense of whether they knew that this footage would become something, a really important document?
Well, you know, at first I think Kimberly was just taping because there she was stranded in the city. She thought maybe there would be some value to, if she caught something good. You know, as the storm wore on, as the levees broke and it became clear that she might not live, she really continued taping because she thought it might be the only thing that she was able to leave behind.
Now, the two of you are the producers of Fahrenheit 9/11 and Bowling for Columbine. How did you meet these folks and get involved in the film?
Well, Tia and I are New Yorkers and filmmakers by trade. And, with our involvement in the films that you mentioned, we have a real strong sense of how the power that cinema can have to sort of advance and even change a dialogue about important political issues. So when we saw, 100,000 people stranded in their own cities, you could see them on television, in need of everything, we were motivated to make a film to try and make sense out of that. We landed in central Louisiana about 10 days after the storm, chasing one story, which was, looking for the absent National Guard. And we ended up crossing paths with Kimberly and Scott and just never looked back.
Right. I mean, the Louisiana National Guard was in Baghdad when the storm hit. And so we were doing interviews there with them, talking to folks who had been, in a whole other country when their own homes went underwater. It was such a sad homecoming for these guys, for these men, men and women. But at one point, the National Guard shut us down. They said, Fahrenheit 9/11 screwed up for all you guys. I'm not sure that she knew that we were the film's producers. But just at that moment, Kimberly and Scott walked into an interview, and, we just decided to go on the road with them.
Now, tell us a little bit about them. Who are these people, Kimberly and Scott?
Oh, well, Kimberly and Scott are two. They're a young couple who grew up in the hard streets of the Ninth Ward. They survived by whatever means they had at their disposal. They were not people who were accustomed to getting assistance from the government. And when the storm came and they had no means to leave, they knew they had to take matters into their own hands. And when we met them, Kimberly was kind of working the angles because she had this footage. And she knew that it had some value, but she also wanted to make sure that they could tell their story and have their story told well. So it was when we connected in that shelter there that everything changed for them and everything changed for us.
Yeah, and now she's an aspiring rap artist. And, you know...
And quite talented.
That's absolutely right. In fact, you can see, you can hear some of her music if you go online to our trailer, TroubleTheWaterFilm.com. First of all, you can see some of this extraordinary footage that she shot. You can also hear, you know, her music. One of the songs we use, she called Trouble the Water. You know, it'll knock your socks off. But lest you think this is all a home movie, you should also see that we shot most of the footage in the film, and it's a extraordinary journey of two people, you know, who are trying to survive a desperate situation and change for the better.
Well, I have to say, that if the two of you shot most of the film, you make yourselves absolutely invisible.
Well, thank you. You know, we had a very strong sense that these remarkable people who we found, who we met, were really the best experts on their lives and on what happened with Katrina, and that their direct personal story was going to move people in ways that bringing in some of the traditional documentary devices like experts and narration just wasn't going to do. And so, you know, our DP is PJ Raval, who's a very talented cinematographer out of Austin, Texas. He approached this like he was shooting a fiction film. You know, and we wanted just to let the action unfold naturally in front of you, and you know, the directing that we did behind the scenes is very subtle.
It's an interesting and it's such a well done documentary in my view, because even though it's very much of a personal story about this couple and their sort of extended family network neighborhood, it brings up some really important points. For example, when you say they have no means to leave, they didn't have an automobile, they didn't have money to go anywhere, but there was also no government assistance or public transportation. And here we are right before an election asking deep questions about what is government for? And it really brings up that question in a stark and horrific way.
You know, there were many failures, you know, around the preparations for the storm, the evacuation of the city. And I think the world knows how miserably the Bush administration failed, how miserably the city government failed. And I think the American, you know, public knows that. I think it and the American public rose to the occasion. I mean, people opened their homes and their hearts and went down to help rebuild in the aftermath of Katrina. Unfortunately, the government has really yet to step up in the way they should in New Orleans and all along the Gulf Coast.
Some of the really terrifying and just unspeakably sad footage in the film is this actual recording of people calling 9/11 and saying, "I'm going to die in my attic. The water is up to my ankles." And 9/11 saying, "Well, sorry."
It's the saddest thing, you know, you'll ever hear. I mean, there were hours and hours of those phone calls of, you know, we can only imagine, you know, what happened to those people. You know, they were stranded in their attics, one after another, told by operators there was no help coming.
How did you get this telephone footage?
Well, just we looked. You know, those are really public record, but they certainly aren't easy to lay your hands on. If you talk to a lot of researchers who are trying to piece together the public record on Katrina, you'll find that it isn't easy. You know, even going back to the records, the historical records of how the levees were constructed so poorly 40, 50 years back, that kind of material just isn't available.
There's also some extremely disturbing footage about people who went to this military base where there were empty rooms and where they were seeking refuge, and not only were they turned away, but they were turned away at gunpoint.
No, this was the largest, you know, government installation in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans, and, you know, hundreds of people streamed there, you know, in the day after, 2 days after the storm, because it was actually, they had a backup generator there. It was the only, you know, lit facility around, and they were turned away. And look, this was not the fault of the soldiers who were, you know, manning the outposts. You know, for whatever reason, the commander-in-chief and the people under him just, you know, didn't reverse the standing orders. So What a tragedy.
It's unspeakably sad, and yet, for people who are listening right now and who are thinking, am I going to go watch this film, Trouble the Water, it's also hopeful and dynamic and full of a kind of spark of life that we also don't usually see when you're looking at this tragic event. You made sure to have that spark of life really shine through the film.
Well, Kimberly and Scott are charismatic heroes reaching beyond themselves and their circumstances, and they never for one minute feel sorry for themselves. These guys, you know, have the faith and, you know, the resilience that I think can carry us all through these hard times. This is not only about Katrina. This is about, you know, what do you do, how do you navigate, you know, hard times, whether it's, you know, hard times economically, because a storm comes your way, what have you. And so, you know, Carl and I were really uplifted, I think, as we made this film, you know, being exposed to Kimberly and Scott and also Kimberly's music. She's a rap artist, and boy, is she talented.
It does. I mean, there is that element of faith. And, of course, the title of the film comes from a spiritual, and there is a faith in God that people have. And I found myself as a viewer feeling kind of ambivalent about that. On the one hand, you know, is this all God's will? Maybe it'd be good to be kind of grumpy about the government that's inflicting some of the horror on the people of New Orleans.
Well, you've got to have something. You know, you've got to have something that keeps you going. You know, whether it's faith in God or faith in yourself or, you know, just a higher purpose. And, you know, in Kimberly's case, I think it was all three. Certainly their religious faith. I think religious values have been taken over by the right wing in this country, and I think there are folks that can, you know, latch onto those values and really build community with that for progressive causes.
It is sort of a strange thing that, at least to some extent, the appearance of religious values taken over by the right wing when we are so close, just a generation away from the tradition of Martin Luther King, who changed the world through a foundation of religious fervor.
That's right. And why should we cede that to the right? I mean, the civil rights movement was built by people of faith. And, you know, of whatever faith you are, I think, whether it's faith in country or, again, faith in yourself or faith in some higher power, people are trying to go beyond themselves and build something better.
There's a real question that this film and a lot of incidents that have been happening lately during the Republican convention also and since then, the issue of freedom of the press, there's a moment where the police are telling Kimberly to turn off her video camera. And although she's not a member of the press, she is making a film. And there are people who are members of the press who have been told basically by law enforcement to turn off their video cameras. And the constitutional issues in that, I think, are very important to talk about. What was your experience? Tell us more about that. You started to a little bit before.
Well, the National Guard shut us down. I mean, they told us we can't tell that, the story that Carl and I set out to tell was off limits. You know, the Bush administration wanted to keep a low profile about the fact that, you know, almost 10,000 National Guardsmen were nowhere near Louisiana when the storm hit. Not only that, but their high water vehicles were there as well. And once the National Guard heard us asking the questions that would, you know, potentially reveal those things, you know, they shut us down. We were just screening this film in a community in Illinois where any time you point a camera at the police, you can be arrested. So
that has to be unconstitutional.
We think it probably is, and I think there are folks, you know, that are resisting that every day and pointing the camera wherever the heck they want, but it's a law in the books.
It is a law that you're not allowed to film the police in Illinois?
Well, you know, you can create laws with what he's referring to is in one particular town, Champaign, Urbana. There actually was an overzealous prosecutor who actually prosecuted and went on to trump up charges against two young men who were videotaping random police stops and racial profiling. So it wasn't until another district attorney of a different political party came into power that those charges were dropped.
What happened to the people who were in prison during the hurricane? Kimberly's younger brother was one of them.
Well, there were some 8,000 people in the city lockup. You know, it's called the Orleans Parish Prison, but it's really a city jail. And, you know, New Orleans is New Orleans. A lot of the people are in there on misdemeanor, you know, charges related to the nightlife in the city. Those prisoners were left in their cells, in locked cells, when the power went out. The TVs were removed, and many prisoners had no idea a storm was even coming, and the guards left, and the sheriff even left town. And so prisoners were left with no food, no water, locked in their cells, with floods on the bottom floors coming, you know, very near to the ceiling, and for several days. I think it was the third day that some fish and wildlife people came in and started to liberate the prisoners. But you ended up in a situation where you had thousands of families in the state of Louisiana who had no idea where their loved ones were because the criminal, all the records were just wiped out. And so wardens in every city, in every jail in the state had prisoners, and they had no idea who they were and what they were in on. And it was just utter chaos.
Well, and Kimberly, who's the star of the film, you know, as you know, her little brother Wink was one of those 8,000 men and women who were trapped inside, and she had no idea where her brother was. So it was harrowing for her, and it was, yeah, especially harrowing for him being trapped inside.
At a certain point, they decide to go to Memphis, Tennessee, where they have some family, and I guess they've never been outside of New Orleans before, so that's really a pretty big risk to take, and they go there for a while, and then they decide to return to New Orleans. Why do they decide to return?
Well, home is home. It's hard to start all over in a new place. And, you know, it seems that at a certain point they realize that where they lived was important, but also, you know, what they were doing with their lives was important, and they could make different decisions no matter where they lived. So the short of it is, you know, they set out to start their life all over again, as Scott says, in the aftermath of the storm. And they were much more comfortable doing that at home.
Yeah, and, you know, they weren't able to find living wage jobs in Memphis. And they had a place to live, and, you know, they were living in the suburbs, essentially. It just wasn't sustainable for them. So they miss their community. They miss the food. They miss there is a affinity group of New Orleanians throughout the country, those who left after the storm and those who, you know, just have gone elsewhere. But, boy, do those people love their city, and they do want to be home.
I think that even in the absence of a safety net, known family and neighborhood people kind of act as the safety net. And when you go to a new city, you just don't have that at all.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
There's a lot of issues that are still ongoing. For example, the lack of public housing and the livable, non-flooded public housing having been demolished, the rent increases, the homelessness increase. This is something that very few news outlets have followed up on, and your film touches on that. Is this a story that you're continuing to follow?
You know, we try to follow and stay close to the, you know, story of Kimberly and Scott and their family and their, you know, their community and what happened. You know, we do end the film giving you some bit of context, but we really tried not to deliver information with this film. This is about a young woman and her husband and how they get through. Yes, the public housing, you know, the city used the opportunity of the storm to demolish many, 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 you know, thousands of livable units of public housing, and they haven't rebuilt those. So it's no wonder why tens of thousands of people haven't, you know, been able to return home. And we hope that folks will check out our website, TroubleTheWaterFilm.com, because there are organizations fighting this battle and many others along the Gulf Coast, fighting for the rights of people to return home, fighting for the rights of people to make decent wages in their own communities, fighting for school children to have, you know, decent education. And these were problems that didn't just start, you know, when the levees broke. These were problems endemic to New Orleans for decades.
Has this film been shown in New Orleans?
Yes, we just actually completed a very successful 5-week run at the Canal Place Cinema, which is is a landmark cinema right down by the French Quarter. We've showed the film twice in community settings in last spring and then in the summer before the national release, and the response has been incredible. And Kimberly and Scott, first of all, are hometown heroes. Their stories, you know, validates the story of so many other people, especially being in the cinema. And people have responded and asked us to do everything that we can to make sure that people all over the country see the story, that they feel the emotion of that, that they reach back and go back to that time and remember the generosity that all of us felt and the anger and outrage that we felt, and make sure that that doesn't happen again.
Just purely on the level of documentary, you're choosing kind of a different form than your standard documentary, which has narration in it and which tells, you know, as you say, a lot of information. How did you, did you have any models on which you based this style of documentary filmmaking?
You know, it's sort of a hybrid. I mean, honestly, our model was, you know, was good filmmaking, was the best, you know, of narrative fiction film, with charismatic characters, with good music and soundtrack, you know, and a story that really unfolds. I mean, the thing about this film, though Carl and I are strongly passionate and political, we really want people to make up their own minds. We want people to learn some things along the way, and you don't really know where the story is headed. A lot of documentaries, you kind of sit down and you know exactly where it's going from the get-go. We didn't want to make that kind of film. You know, so we wanted to make the kind of film that folks would come out to see, you know, on a Saturday night.
What are Kimberly and Scott doing now? You say they're hometown heroes. Did the film actually change their life trajectory?
Well, it certainly changed Kimberly's, you know, notion of herself. I mean, look, Kimberly and Scott, they lived a difficult life. They had at times, you know, turned to selling drugs to make it through. And they decided they wanted to transform their lives. But they had always heard very negative things about themselves. And I think seeing themselves on screen doing passive things was itself, you know, very transformative for them. They're good people, you know, and they don't want to be defined, and they shouldn't be defined by things they've done that may not be so good. So they are moving forward. They have a record company, Born Hustler Records. You can actually hear some of the music on our trailer and also on her website, bornhustlerrecords.com.
Election Day is Tuesday. Some people have voted early. Some people are going to vote on Election Day or in the next couple of days. What are your thoughts about the upcoming election and its relationship to your film, Trouble the Water?
You know, I think Trouble the Water reminds us what's at stake right now in this election, who and why we're fighting and on whose behalf and what we need to change and the accountability we need to seek as American citizens. I think if you don't know how you're going to vote, I think this film might help clarify those things. If you do know how you're going to vote, you might just want to see it to get uplifted.
As I was watching this film, I thought of a conversation I recently had with a friend of mine who lives in Louisiana. And he calls himself white trash from Louisiana, even though he's a lawyer. And he said, first of all, he's never seen so many black people voting early. And he said, if Barack Obama does get elected, race relations in this country will change rapidly. And I was thinking about that as I was watching this film, because not only could there be really the possibility of a more egalitarian set of policies in this country in which there's not so much institutional racism, but also just the sense that African-American people could have about themselves seeing a black president in office. It's an awesome thing to contemplate.
It is really awesome. Look, this is, you know, what might be the most important election of our lifetime. And this is a film that shows us exactly what's at stake, you know, what we're fighting for. And I think race and racism permeates everything in this country, in this society. And this is an administration that is promising change. That doesn't mean all of us are off the hook. I mean, we've got to work hard to do what we can do to keep all the politicians to their word and to their promises. But I think any change is going to be a good one. one of the reasons we want to go, you know, we want to get people out to the theater this weekend is to remind us, though, that we're going through difficult times right now with the economy, with the home foreclosures, with unemployment. These are voices. This is a soundtrack that can get us through these really difficult times and help us. You know, we have to imagine a better future. And this is something we all can do together, and we can create it.
Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl are the producers and directors of the film Trouble the Water, which opens today at the Screen on the campus of the College of Santa Fe. I want to thank you so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, and we really hope that your listeners do make it out to see the film because, you know, how many people that show up this weekend will really determine how long it will stay in Santa Fe, and we would love to have a long run in your city. So please do show up for this film and for independent cinema.
And the film is the winner of the Grand Jury Prize at the 2008 Sundance Festival, and that is quite a great honor. So congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. You can go out and see why it is the jury gave us that prize, and we look forward to hearing from your listeners on the website.
TroubleTheWaterFilm.com. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe New Mexican. And he is with us here, as he is just about every Friday, speaking of the arts. And we're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company. Isn't that a nice trick that we can be in the studio at one moment and just in the baking company so quickly right after that?
I agree, Mary Charlotte. And what a wonderful day to be here with you.
What are you talking about?
Oh, that's just my Bela Lugosi imitation. It's Halloween.
It is Halloween. You look like the werewolf that I knew you really were inside.
That's because, here we go again, making visual comments about my vicissitudinous. I managed to,
what?
My vicissitudinous. I was out late last night. I'm not working today. I didn't shave. I didn't, my hair's sort
Robert,
of a mess.
Your vocabulary is like whatever.
Well, that's exactly it. We're here to talk about what's happening in the arts, and I come on the show, and immediately there's... This is like mudslinging that's happening in the election. If you and I were running for office, I wouldn't have a chance.
You'd be slinging so much mud at me that I'd look like a big mud pie.
Yeah. Remember that movie Swamp Thing? That was good with Adrienne Barbeau. She's one of my favorite actresses.
So here's something. I'm going to start off with an event that's happening in Albuquerque.
Oh.
The Out of the Ordinary Festival of Film, Performance, and Photography highlights work from all over the world. They're starting today with a reception for Austrian photographer Ulrich Eigner at the North Fourth Gallery in Albuquerque, followed at 8 o'clock by the May Day Dance of Montreal at the North Fourth Theater. And then, and they're also there on Sunday. And then Saturday night, Taro Saarinen Company, one of Europe's most acclaimed contemporary dance companies, is coming here all the way from Helsinki, Finland, to perform a triple bill at the South Broadway Cultural Center at 8 o'clock. And then it's going on in the coming weeks, all sorts of dance and photography and all sorts of good things. And so you can go to vsartsnm.org or call them at 344-4542 for more information.
That's pretty good.
Out of the ordinary.
Meanwhile, also out of the ordinary.
Like you.
How this ties in with Halloween is beyond me, but Neil Sedaka. He's going to be playing Buffalo Thunder Resort tomorrow night. Don't you love that?
Stop the presses.
Wouldn't it be great if Bela Lugosi did like a Neil Sedaka song? I love my calendar girl. That'd be terrific. Anyway, it's 8 o'clock up at Buffalo Thunder Resort if you want to go. I haven't been there yet. Here's the phone number, 455-5555. I have a slight case of the sniffles, but I'm feeling great. So I apologize if my voice is discombobulated, and don't tell me that's the wrong verb.
No, it sounds just fine.
Meanwhile, Teatro Paraguas presents Cuentos de Otro Mundo. You know what that means?
Tales from another world.
Yes, certainly are. 7:30 p.m. tonight and tomorrow, 2 p.m. Sunday at El Museo Cultural de Santa Fe. You can get in on a sliding scale. Bring your own slide. No charge for 16 and younger, 473-0143. I have a piece in today's Pasatiempo about it. It's five different stories from Hispanic folklore from northern New Mexico. Scary stuff. There's a skeleton pictured in the paper in the Pasatiempo. Skeletons always used to scare me as a kid. How about you?
Not me.
I ordered one of those skeletons from the comic book.
You said that last time.
I know, but I have to start again because it's Halloween. And it turned out to be like plastic.
I know.
And he hung in my closet for like 10 years. And then my brother took a baseball bat to it.
There is a Day of the Dead celebration that is at the Chuck Jones Gallery. It's on now, and it'll end on Sunday, November 2nd, with a reception from 5 to 7, with two different mariachi groups and refreshments and sponsored by Panaderia Zaragoza. And let's see. Anyway, that's from 5 to 8 at the Chuck Jones Gallery.
Meanwhile, Victoria Price Art and Design over on Pacheco Street, 1512 Pacheco, to be honest with you. Pacheco Park, they call it, here in Santa Fe. She's having a Day of the Dead garage sale. And she's got an ad in the Paso Tiempo, and there's a picture of her dad, Vincent Price. And it's funny because it says, if you don't shop at my daughter's garage sale, I'll haunt you for the rest of your life. And that's hilarious. But anyways, if you want to go, there's items from the Vincent Price Estate as well as the Victoria Price Estate and from New Mexico Estate, I guess. 982-8632. It's from 9 to 2 tomorrow, Day of the Dead. There's other Day of the Dead events. For example, I think the Southern Santa Fe Rail Yard, they're doing like a haunted train ride out to Lamy. And I don't have the information on that, but I'll try to get it to you. There's also that new movie, The Haunting of Molly Hartley, which looks scary. This woman is haunted. She's a girl, and she's exercised and hanging out at the spa and stuff.
At an exercise club?
Yeah, and it's there's an exorcism about it and all that. The Ghost Train, yeah, that's tonight, 6 to midnight, with DJ Miss Ginger. There's going to be a 1950s club car, and it's the Santa Fe Southern Railway. 989-8600, Ghost Train reservations.
Here's some musical things. The Let's post-election cabaret. Come and celebrate your candidate's victory or drown your sorrows in jazz, a benefit evening for KSFR, which is what you're listening to right now, ladies and gentlemen, featuring John Trent Acosta's Straight Up Trio with Burt Dalton and Michael Olivola and the Southwest Jazz Orchestra, Arlen Asher, the poet Lauren Camp, and all of that is Wednesday, the day after Election Day at 5:30. At the Maria Benitez Room at the Lodge at Santa Fe. You can get tickets, you can get a whole table, you can get a table for 8, tapas, drinks, all sorts of things. Call Linda for reservations if you want at 428-1379, and all benefits go to KSFR. And I also wanted to let you know that Tony Buford and Brandy Herbert will be playing blues, ballads, and jazz tunes at the Ore House, and that's tomorrow night from 8 to 11, Saturday, November 1st.
Drown your sorrows, huh? I tried to drown my sorrows once, but it turned out she could swim. Hey, there's other Halloween stuff going on that you need to hear about. Last night I was over at the Santa Fe Playhouse. I wasn't there in my official capacity. It was just a night off. To see, and I can never pronounce this word. I'm sure you will, because you're half French.
I'm not French.
Well, you always, you know, you talk like every language that comes up, you manage to somehow
fake,
extemporize the dialogue to where it sounds like yours. You know, if it's Swahili.
So what's the word?
Grand, is it guignol or guignol?
I don't know.
Oh, I got you.
Guignol, maybe?
Yeah, it's like the theater of horror.
I don't know.
So they're doing 4, not 5 as advertised, but 4 short one acts that come from the old Grand Guignol Theater in Paris, which was the theater of terror, horror, blood, guts. And it's a strange mix, and I it's an interesting evening, and they certainly are risky. Liam Lockhart put it together. It was a full house. A lot of dark comedy and some gruesome scenes, but some of it at the same time didn't quite work. But I think for the Halloween weekend, it would be a really interesting theatrical piece to go see.
Hey, how'd Mummy's Dummies go?
Mummy's Dummies was a blast. Thank you for helping me to promote it. And we had fun, and it was a one weekend only, and got better and better, and the audiences got bigger and bigger, and it was a delight. Thank you. Grand Guignol, the French Theater of Halloween Horror, gala tonight, 988-4262 at the Playhouse. They're going to have... I think tonight they're having costumes and drinks, et cetera, et cetera. Runs through the weekend. The Playhouse is at 142 East of Argus Street last weekend to go see it. And Meowwolf has a Halloween show. Did you know that?
Yay!
Yay! 8 o'clock tonight, 1800 2nd Street.
Meow.
Meow.
Woof.
The Portland, Oregon. Oh, so there's a cat and a dog.
Well, why do you think it's called Meowwolf?
I was just thinking of that. That's interesting. Yesterday on TV was The Tingler with Vincent Price. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
He pulls the spine out of the woman that can't scream, and it becomes The Tingler, and it strangles people. It's terrific. And so first
that
they're
sounds so great.
No, it's good. And so first they're going to experiment on a cat, so they go and get a cat, which happens to be a black cat, and they put him in a case. Nothing bad happens to him, so don't panic. Then they go and they get a dog, and there's this little dialogue about, like, what would happen if the dog and the cat had a fight. I don't know.
I've seen that kind of thing.
And usually the cat wins.
Not if it's my dogs.
My 16-year-old cat, Keystone, she keeps the dogs in line all the time. They groom her, like they give her baths, and she accepts the baths, but then if they go too far, she swats them, and they're scared of her.
Well, that happens if you've got good dogs and the cats and dogs grow up together. But if you have Jack Russell Terriers,
yeah,
they
oh, no,
eat cats.
Are their, yeah, cats are their
nemesis.
Not mention that, but also their
food.
Opponents. Yeah, so
their breakfast.
But what about the dachshund?
No, the dachshund is fine with cats.
Yeah, see, they're friendly.
So I got an email from a numerologist who's doing an evening called, a free talk called A Numerological Look at What is Going On in the World Today, Thursday, November 6th from 7 to 8:30 at the Annapurna Chai House in Santa Fe at 905 West Alameda.
Is it free?
It says free talk.
So the numbers tell us what's happening?
Ruth Abrams Dreyer is the name of the, and her website is cybernumbers.com.
The numbers in my checking account are telling me what's happening. It's
yeah,
really
well,
depressing.
They'll do that.
Yeah. Got to get a new radiator this week. There's nothing left of mine.
Hey, did you talk about the ghost train already?
I mentioned the ghost train.
You did.
And if you pick up Pasa Tiempo
and
today,
DJ Miss Ginger and cocktails.
She's there.
And
I mentioned all this four minutes ago when you
That's
were
what I thought.
Busy looking at some
I was
other
just
guy.
Checking.
Cute blonde surfer guy comes in, and there
what?
You go. The
Pasa
Tiempo.
He's lying.
Today, no. I'm watching your eyes, and I see where
there's is. Not a single surfer in this house. I can guarantee you that.
Well, the guy's pretty good looking all the same, the one you were looking at. This cover story in Pasa Tiempo today is Doug Fairfield's essay on photographer Lee Friedlander. And it's an interesting image today. There's an opening at Andrew Smith Gallery tied in with a new book published by Radius Books. Look in the Pasa Tiempo today for the story. And if you're going to pick up the Pasa Tiempo, get this. You get my firsthand account of spending several hours at night in the old abandoned hospital downtown. Scary. Supposedly there's ghosts, phantoms, spooks, gorilla men, everything you could possibly think of in this old place. So Paul Weideman and I went into the hospital, and we spent about 5 hours there from 8 to 1. And the story, including a strange photo with mysterious images that popped up by Jane Phillips that prove without a doubt that there's antics going on there. There's ectoplasmic antics and also, shall we say, ghost goofiness. Not to mention boogeyman buffoonery. It's all here in the story, which is first person, and I'm telling you, it's something to read to the kids before they go to bed.
You crazy
at
nut.
2 o'clock today. So ghost stuff. There's book reviews of haunted books, and there's Rob DeWalt's essay on heavy metal bands, which ties in with Halloween because they're kind of scary and the images look frightening.
Hey, I was down at the station last night, and I saw Peter Williams, who is playing tonight at midnight
the Kiss
cover band called Love Gun.
Love Gun.
They're
yeah.
supposed to be fabulous.
Yeah, they're playing at the Second Street Brewery.
Second Street Brewery.
At 11:59 p.m. What's that about?
Well, it's sort of like midnight.
Well, why start a minute early?
That's a very good question. You'll have to go down there and find out for yourself. Are you going to get dressed up and wear a costume?
No, I'm going to go home and watch. There's horror movies on Turner Classic Movies all day. I don't have to work today. So I'm going to go home, put on my pajamas around 10:30.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm just going to watch ghost movies. Vincent Price is in a couple. Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff. You put those guys on TV, Lon Chaney Jr., I don't go anywhere.
I'm going to go out as a terrier.
Really?
I don't know. I'm going to try. Hey, Halloween party at the Tin Star with Ike. And it's at 9:30. There's a small cover, and there's a costume contest. Where's
Great.
The Tin Star?
The Tin Star's on Water Street. They got the coldest beer in town. And when I say nice things about places I go, I don't get anything from them. They don't even know who I am most of the time, unless I talk. Then they say, you're Robert Knott.
Because they're listening to you right now.
Elk's Haunt Fest. Chills, thrills, and possibly some spills. Or the tour of the Mansion of Mayhem and the Haunted Hayride. 5:30 tonight, it's family-friendly. 7 to 9, there's more adult scariness, which means you shouldn't bring the 8-year-old on that stuff. Why do you bring your 8-year-old to an R-rated movie is beyond me. But so you bring the 8-year-old to the 5:30 show of the Elks Haunt Fest, and then you go to the 7 o'clock show. It's at the Elks Lodge, where all the alcoholics go. 1615 Old Pecos Trail, 577-3678. Not too expensive. And head out there. I've also got to mention that Signs of Santa Fe, I know nothing about them, 2911 Rufina Street, has a haunted house, surprise, and treat bags for the kids and teens at their house of horror at 7 o'clock tonight. And you got to pay to get in. Here's a phone number, 474-0495. Meanwhile, The Beaux Arts Masked Ball is tonight.
Yay!
Halloween for grown-ups. You dress up, you wear a mask, and preferably nothing else. Music, dancing, and mask auction, which reminds me, if you ever decide you want to pose with no clothes on for somebody,
that's not going to happen.
Wear a mask. Put like one of those carnival masks on, because I'm telling you, from personal experience, that the next thing you know, stuff gets put on the internet. Not that... Don't look at me that way. I shouldn't have opened my mouth, but I always try to advise people that you should, at the very least, because there's a funny story I have to tell. I got to
go ahead.
When I was
make
in,
our day.
No, once I was in this. Now I'm in trouble. But what happened was I was in.
Robert Knott, ladies and gentlemen, has turned bright red. He has the color of a beet.
I was in the military.
He's the color of borscht.
And in Europe, and the guys' dorm was downstairs, and the women's dorm was upstairs, and they didn't partition off the stairs. So there was a lot of, shall we say, interplay. And I went up there one morning to go talk to a friend of mine and knock on her door. And across the hall from her comes out this beautiful woman with no clothes. She's going to the shower. And I was shocked. I didn't know what to do. And all she had was a hand towel. Where do you think she covered it? Over her face. So I wouldn't know who she was.
There you go.
But I could figure out which room she came out of. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, the Beaux-Arts Ball. So wear a mask. It's 9 o'clock to midnight tonight. I don't know why you distract me with these shenanigans. Center for Contemporary Arts, 1050 Old Pecos Trail, 982-1338, benefits CCA. So head over there. So there's a lot of Halloween shows. There's also the Model Railroad Club open house tour today. It'd be nice if we knew what time it was, and we didn't get that in Paso Tiempo for reasons I can't explain, but I can give you a phone number, 466-1153. The Catamount's having a Halloween party tonight and a costume contest with DJ PA plus Trix with a capital T. I don't know if that's a group or you're going to be fooled once you get there. 9 to 1, 5, I can't say prices on the air, but I already said it. Same number of fingers on one hand. Cover charge. Catamount's downtown on Water Street. There's a transvestite rock opera featuring Joe West at the Cowgirl tonight at 9. I guess you could say that's kind of Halloweenish. And John Gooch is at the Eldorado playing piano. Maybe he'll play the Monster Mash. That's unlikely, I guess.
Yeah, it is a little bit unlikely. So what else is happening? At the Process presents Rainbow Arabia and Ganji at the Santa Fe Complex. That is Sunday, November 2nd at 7 o'clock at 624 Agua Fria, 982-0389. And the blurb, creating the kind of noise you could imagine DFA might make had they ever decided to throw a party in the underground ruins of Egypt, and the ghosts of the pyramid were shaken into action by the sinuous rhythms and earthquaking bass lines. Blending the sandy sounds of Middle East with the young energy of Los Angeles youth, you have Rainbow Arabia.
That's pretty good. It sounds like they're trying to tie it into the Halloween time.
And that's just Rainbow Arabia. There's also Ganji, who recently headlined at the CMJ Showcase in New York. Dissonance, contrasting sunshining optimism with harsh reality, juxtaposing dreamlike vocals, guitar playing, and melodies. There's some really interesting stuff going on in Santa Fe and at the Santa Fe Complex. And this group that's doing a lot of presenting, we're going to hear more from them, is called The Process. For more information, 982-0389.
Wait a minute, you're talking about Ganji? Remember that movie with Ben Kingsley about Ganji? That was pretty good.
Hey, Santa Fe Art Institute. Diane was here. Diane Karp was just here. She's the executive director of that amazing organization. And they're having a free Halloween party from 8 to 10. Eats and drinks and good folks and great art. And it's the closing event for the... tonight's Halloween. For the exhibition Outsider, come as your favorite outsider.
Huh. I'm looking for that. Oh, yeah, here it is. It's in the Paso Tiempo. It's called Tourism, Migration, and Exile. Group show closing reception 8 to 10. That's good.
Tonight, meanwhile, I'll be there.
Tomorrow's
dressed as my dog Milk.
Why?
Milk's a white boy. I don't even have to really use much of a costume.
Milk looks like a mountain goat.
Like a mountain goat.
He looks like a friendly little mountain goat.
He's a little white mountain goat with a black nose and deep brown eyes that look at you and say, don't ever leave this house again.
A friend of mine who
unless
saw
you're
Milk
me for
insists
a walk.
That Milk is the Sam Elliott of dogs.
Who's Sam Elliott?
Sam Elliott's like this classic... film actor. He plays in a lot of westerns. He's an older guy. He's very good looking with a handlebar mustache.
Milk doesn't have a handlebar mustache.
Just because somebody says, like people say I look like Robert Mitchum because of the cleft chin and the husky. I know. I'm a drunk.
You do.
I'm
that is so
to
true.
Like Foster Brooks. Let's see here. What else are we talking about? Hey, tomorrow night's the 20th annual Aid in Comfort Gala. What do you know about it?
You know more than I do.
Well, it starts at 8 o'clock with a silent auction. There's dinner. It's at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center downtown on Marcy Street. You got to pay to get in. The Aid and Comfort Fund at Southwest Care Center benefits it. It's a very good cause. 989-9255. And once again, you can go inch sort of masquerade. They're urging you to be Shakespearean, which means you should do a costume like Hamlet, something uplifting like that. What Shakespeare character would you like to dress up as?
The Beast with Two Backs.
What?
Hamlet.
You'd be Hamlet?
I don't know.
I'd be Hamlet's brother, Omelette, because I'm a good egg.
Anyway. A weekend class with Denny Cope and Susan Rush is coming up starting tomorrow. It's called Lessons for the Living, Being with Dying. And we had Denny Cope on the air the other day, who wrote this wonderful book about death and dying. It's hard to think that there's a wonderful book about the subject, but it really is. And it's from 9:30 to 5 on this weekend, tomorrow and Sunday. And for all sorts of questions that you may have about death and dying and illness and those kinds of things. Her book is called Dying, A Natural Passage. If you want to call Denny for more information, it's 474-8383.
Y el día de los muertos. Mañana en el Fraternal Order de Eagles. 833 Camino Early. Es para los niños. Y los niños de Santa Fe hacen una obra de teatro. De seis a nueve. 6 to 9. I love it when, like, you turn on those old Mexican horror movies and they got the announcers. They always make it scarier than it is. They're like, Los Monstruos de Santa Fe. You get so excited just hearing the guy talk about the monsters, and then, like, they've got these cheesy costumes and stuff. I love that stuff.
You do.
What time is it?
8:57.
What do you know about Orpheus and Eurydice?
Orpheus and Eurydice are Greek. It's a Greek myth. That was made into, it's been told many times and in many ways, and my favorite version of it is the Brazilian film called Orpheus, Black Orpheus.
Yeah, he's descending, right, into hell to go get his girlfriend?
Basically, but it's a beautiful love story, and it's a kind of remake of the Greek myth held during Carnival, and it's full of samba and great music, and it's fabulous. Why are you asking?
7 o'clock tomorrow night, new chamber drama by Ricky Ian Gordon over at the Lensic with Joe Illick and others performing. It's got to get in. 7 o'clock, Lensic, 9 at 8, 1, 2, 3, 4. I did a little mixed media on it. Wonder if that the phrase "the girlfriend from hell" comes from that. A lot of guy went back there to get her's beyond me. But anyway, lots of stuff happening. Pick up the Pasta Tiempo. See the ghost stories. See the ghost book reviews.
I can't believe you're not going to get dressed up in a costume.
I'm not going to. No, I like costuming stuff, but I want to do that during the course of the year. I want to do that on September 4th and on July 9th and on May 7th. On Halloween, I'm going home to watch Vincent Price movies.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Robert Knott is the associate editor of the Pasta Tiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and he's with us here just about every Friday.
That's right.
Speaking of the arts, and he usually sings.
I usually sing. The Mary Charlotte. I usually sing because she ain't no harlot.
KSFR streams live on the web at KSFR.org. You can reach me at radiocafe@KSFR.org by email or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at the website SantaFeRadioCafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Mary Lynn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, jazz a la carta.
I love the way I insult her and she gives me a left hook. I love Mary Charlotte and she loves me.
Crazy nut.
La 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 lee.
So if you haven't voted yet, ladies and gentlemen, go out and vote. So many people have already voted that maybe there won't be any lines on Election Day, but there probably will be. So if you can early vote, do it. But whatever you do, I try to tell people.
I love you so.
I'm trying to tell people to vote.
Next week, and I hope I get a peek of. Oh, voting? Yes, absolutely. Tuesday, I'll be there.
Yeah, well, but also you can vote. I'm going to vote today.
What are you laughing about? Always clowning. We come on the show to do arts, and you do buffoonery.
Who,
vote.
Me?
Get out. You can vote early at the local downtown at the.
The county clerk's office, at the rodeo fairgrounds, at the Edgewood Fire Station, at the El Dorado Is it the senior center? Anyway, you can go online and figure that out, or you can call the county clerk's office. But go vote. And we will see you. Have a wonderful weekend. Happy Halloween. You'll be back next Friday, Robert Knott, and I'm out of here.